Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Welcome into the early line, hour two on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on a Thursday morning preview hour. A lot to get to here, the NFL, college football, but we started off with Major League Baseball postseason action. We're through the wild card round and we're into the divisional series here. We started off with the Houston Astros and the Chicago White Sox. The Astros with Lance McCullers on the bump. Right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, a minus 136 favorite. The White Sox send Lance Lynn to the mound. The total for this one, Donnie, is 7.5. I want to start with Lance Lynn. For a while, the favorite to win the AL Cy Young. They then kind of shut him down because the White Sox said awards don't matter. We have the division wrapped up. Let's rest our guys. What do you make of Lance Lynn coming into this matchup? And, of course, specifically, how he profiles against this Houston lineup?
Profiles very well. And, you know, we'll talk about the pricing in the series just a little bit and also the pricing of this game. But if we just take a look at matchups here, this is a very good series. And two teams, to me, that are very closely, you know, lined up, per se. Let's take a look at Lance Lynn, the right-handed batter, right-handed pitcher, excuse me. Over the last 30 days of Major League Baseball, you're right. The key for the White Sox, it seems to me, Kevin, was over the past month, let's make sure everybody gets to the starting line and we'll play that way. Similar to like an NFL team in the preseason and in camp. We're not going to play very many guys because our goal is not really to be as sharp as we can be, but we think it's more importantly to be healthy by the time everything gets underway. 3.23 xFIP number. How about the strikeout rate here, Kevin? Close to 30%. Sensational. And also when you want to take a look at those individual matchups, Lynn being a right-handed batter, how does he fare against left-handed batters? Very good. 2.89 as a weighted on base percentage and ISO power number 0.179, which is right around average, which is fine. Take a look at the right-handed batters that he's faced here. 227 weighted on base average with an ISO power number. Get this number, Kevin. 0.025, which means nobody is making hard contact against him from the right side. So you take a look in this lineup today. The lefties in the lineup, Brantley, Alvarez, and Tucker anticipated only three of those, and the rest will be righties. Now, you do have a really good lineup contact-wise here, Kevin. So Lance Lynn, who is a strikeout pitcher, get this. Keep in mind, in Major League Baseball, you want to have your guys at the plate, you know, making contact, not striking out on 20% of the at-bats or less. That is above the Major League Baseball average. Take a look at the lineup tonight. Altuve, 9%. Brantley, 4%. Bregman, 10%. Alvarez at 23%, which is a little bit higher. But look at the next couple guys. Gurriel, 12%. Correa, 18%. Tucker, 15%. They have Myers and Maldonado for sort of fall off the tabletop at the end of that lineup. But not a ton of strikeouts here, which is Lance Lynn usually feasts. So for you're looking from a batting perspective here, good lineup here for the Astros. Good pitcher with Lynn. It's playoff baseball.
The interesting thing about Lance Lynn, Donnie, is that 4.5 strikeout prop on the FanDuel Sportsbook with even money to the over. We've talked about this a little bit in hour number one, how perhaps the leashes might be a little bit longer here now that we are into the series instead of the single game elimination format. If you look at Lynn's last 9 outings, he went over that 4.5 mark in 6 of them, with the 3 times he fell short getting to 4 right there. Now you might say, but this is the Houston Astros. He pitched against the Astros back in June and he got hit hard. 6 earned runs and only 4 innings of work, but he did strike out 6 batters in that performance there. I think Lynn over the strikeout prop is a legitimate shout here as the radio audience enters the fold here. Appreciate all those listening to the early line on Sports Grid Radio. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on a Thursday morning. Donnie, talk to me about Lynn's counterpart, though. Lance McCullers here seeing this White Sox lineup.
Yeah, take a look at this. 3.65 xFIP number over the last 30 days heading into the Major League playoffs. Strikeout rate, very good for Lance McCullers, 25%. Doing damage against both lefties and righties. Keep in mind, McCullers is a righty. So lefties, 285 weighted on base percentage. Righties here at a 214. ISO power numbers about average to less. So he is keeping up with the Joneses, as we like to say. A powerful lineup that is finally healthy. We'll see if Jose Abreu gets to the starting lineup tonight. But you're looking up and down that line. There's not a lot of auto outs here. And this is playoff baseball. This is particularly what you get. So, Kevin, when we take a look at a team total or a total, for instance, here, let's just say there's eights across the board. Maybe they wind up at 7.5. Sometimes we could take a look at those first five innings totals to the over as opposed to the full game. What is the common, you know, scenario around Major League Baseball in the playoffs when you get there? Everybody has really good bullpens. That's what we've seen. That's why in the, you know, games where we see the elimination games, you have your aces on the mound, but they're getting quick hooks in the third, fourth, and fifth inning. Why? Because the bullpens are so dominant and you could go matchup to matchup, guy versus guy. So taking a look in this series, or even in this game alone here, Kevin, if the runs are going to come and you are going to get your 8 runs or 9 runs, you need to cash in that ticket. Doesn't it make more sense here, Kevin, that you're probably going to need a 3-2 game after 5 innings, which would cash that total for the first 5, as opposed to saying, hey, let's get into the back end of the bullpens where the power arms come out, and they're very good on both sides between Houston and the White Sox. So if I'm looking at this game overall, maybe a total in the first 5 innings makes more sense than actually the total for the game here.
I think that makes a lot of sense there. A legitimate look early. Just to mention, McCullers, multiple games against this White Sox team this season. 13 total innings, only 3 earned runs between the two starts there. And a White Sox team that finished below 500 on the road this year. This is a tough task for Chicago. We'll take a quick look at the series price after the break. I will also, of course, break down Rays Red Sox, the AL picks up today. We break it all down here on the Early Line on Sports.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, back right here on Sports Grid. Let's finish up Astros White Sox here. And Donnie, the Astros for the series are a -130 favorite. On the FanDuel Sportsbook, though, there's a lot of markets that you can bet, not just the series winner, but the amount of games that the series will go, the correct score of the series for the length of it, as well as after 3 games. And even the series spread, Donnie, which I'll be honest, jumped out to me a little bit here on the Houston Astros at a plus number of 184. To win this series, whether it be a clean sweep 3-0 or to win it 3-1, it feels like a legitimate shot that this could be one where the Astros finish it up in maybe less than 5 games. Did anything from these series price markets with the Astros and the White Sox jump out to you?
Yeah, they're constantly moving here. And we take a look right now at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Okay, -130 on the Houston Astros, a +112 on the Chicago White Sox. And I have to say, it sounds about right. If we're looking just on pedigree of teams, been there, done that, won it before. Obviously, the Astros, you're looking at that and saying to yourself, Kevin, that's a cheap price here on a team that knows how to get it done, veteran manager. You know, they've been through the cheating scandals. You're not going to boo them, and they're not going to get them out of their game because they've been there, done that. But having a look at the White Sox at a +112, because if you just match up this series, particularly, Kevin, with an overall lineup, talent for talent, it's about equal. And we're talking about guys like Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, Brantley. There's a lot of really good hitters in the Houston lineup. But there are superstars after superstars lined up also on the White Sox. Now, also, Kevin, when you take a look at the starting pitching, Lance McCullers is a good pitcher, but nothing else really jumps off the page. You have some legitimate Cy Young caliber arms on the White Sox that are now healthy for the playoffs. And let's get to the bullpen. With the more dominant players coming in out of the bullpen are coming from the Chicago White Sox. So a quick question to you, Kevin, is the way I look at this series. Are we just pricing the Houston Astros favorites, A, because they're home, and B, because they've been there before? Mm-hmm. Because if we're looking at talent versus talent, this is a coin flip series to me, and maybe even more talent on the Chicago White Sox side.
I think that's totally fair, right? I mean, we've talked about this White Sox team in every facet. The lineup is loaded. The Lance Lynn, Giolito, Rodon 1-2-3 combo at the top of the lineup, or rather staff, make you know, is very frightening. And their bullpen is probably baseball's best, at least, you know, as you mentioned, piece for piece. The interesting thing, Donnie, especially about a five-game set, is the Astros are going to be favorites at home in the first two games, which means they're going to be favored to be up 2-0 in the series. I don't know about the White Sox winning three consecutive games. It puts the onus on Chicago to win one of these first two games here. And that's the interesting thing about betting series prices, Donnie, in a five-game set, where I feel like the value on a series number really comes in is being willing to go against the result of whatever the first game brings to the table. If the Astros win the first game, McCullers on the mound, they're favored to do so, right? They're going to be above a minus 200 favorite to win the series. It's just the natural ebbs and flows of series prices moving. But again, even on the other side of the coin, if the White Sox take this first game, Donnie, I wouldn't be hesitant to come back on an Astros team that probably would be underdogs for the series, even though it would just be the one game they would have lost.
Yeah, trying to find, like, you know, that opportunity to try to bet into, because if you think the series is going to go five games, Kevin, and you think you're going to be a dog in both of the opening games, meaning games 1 and 2 for the White Sox, maybe you just bet blindly in the first game and say, okay, I'm going to roll with this, and I'm going to take the Chicago White Sox on the money line game one. Because if they don't win game one, then you have to win game two, still have a good pitcher on the mound. And if you think the series is going to be tough, 1-1, you would get your plus money back. But also, if you steal game one, then you don't have to bet game two, and you already have your series price basically in your pocket at this point. I think this is probably, out of all the series that we're going to line up for, outside of the Giants in San Francisco, which is going to be a great battle, I'm very intrigued by this because it's sort of the unknown for me, Kevin, about the White Sox, a team I was so high on all season long until it didn't matter for them anymore, and they sort of got pushed back. The same thing in the National League we'll eventually talk about with the Milwaukee Brewers. There wasn't a lot of pressure on their season. Now the pressure ramps back up and see how they handle it.
I tell you what, overall, and I'll be honest with you, as a Yanks fan, a lot of times they lose and I mentally turn baseball off. I think we've got four tremendous series across the board here, though I might be riding a little bit high due to Trey Turner and Tommy Edman helping the bankroll last night. Let's see if we can go back to some hitter prop parlays here, though, Donnie. When we're talking about Boston and Tampa Bay, we're talking about McClanahan and Eduardo Rodriguez. This is why I can't stand this Tampa team. I mean, they were able to set their rotation exactly how they want, and they send out Shane McClanahan, and they're a minus 160 favorite, and they should be a minus 160 favorite. Let's start there, Donnie. How does Boston profile against the Rays ace, Shane McClanahan?
Yeah, Shane McClanahan, Rose McClanahan, doesn't matter. They just throw random people out there on the mound to try to get you out. And it's not as if they're throwing ultra-dominant guys out, but they get the job done. A 4.19 xFIP over the past 30 days for McClanahan, the lefty. He's not a big strikeout guy. But when you take a look at his splits between weighted on-base average and ISO power numbers, they're very good. It's almost like as long as you put the Tampa Bay hat on and that uniform and play down in Tropicana, you're a dominant pitcher, whether it's bullpen, starting pitcher, doesn't matter who even the pitcher is. When's the last time it feels like a starting pitch, like, hey, man, Tampa Bay started, didn't make it out of the second inning, who wasn't an opener, and he gave up 5 earned runs? It never happens. You get the honest effort. So looking at the breakdown, only 14 batters he's faced from the left-hand side. Now, also, keep in mind, McClanahan is a left-handed pitcher. 248 weighted on base average. 0 ISO power number, and then from the right-hand side, oh, yeah, Kevin, he's a left-handed pitcher. Righties probably get after him all the time. Not the case here. A 267 weighted on-base percentage and an ISO power number of 111. And you're looking at this lineup here for the Boston Red Sox against left-handed pitching over the past 30 days. It's almost in disaster mode. ISO power number is something we like to look at. How much damage are you doing at the plate to lefties here, Kevin? Take a look at this lineup. Also, always like the preference if you're new listening, ISO power number, 0.170 is about the Major League Baseball average. So anything above that number is very good. Anything below it is not so good. Take a look at this. Hernandez, 125. Schwarber, 143. Xander Bogaerts, who went yard. Oh, my goodness. He's such a good hitter here. Look what he did against Gerrit Cole. A 0.0 ISO power number in the past 30 days. Rafael Devers in that lineup. Boy, he's a good young talent. How about this ISO power number? 0.027 versus lefties over the past 30 days. Renfroe and Dalbec have some really good numbers, however, against lefties, but then they go right back down low. Verdugo, 0. Vasquez, 0.063. Arroyo, 0. There's a lot of zero ISO power numbers in this lineup versus lefty, Kevin. I would say Tampa Bay matches up very well, particularly with McClanahan, the lefty, going up against that lineup.
I will say, though, Renfro's a guy I looked at, Donnie, from a two-plus total bases standpoint here in this game. 3-for-8 this year against McClanahan with a home run. And also, trying to factor in the ballpark, at times, you know, it depends. But Tropicana feels like a place where I want to know how you perform this year. And he was good, had 11 hits this year at the Trop, and 7 of them were extra base hits there. So I think Renfro could be a legitimate shout there, Donnie, for two-plus bases. I was also taking a look at Kike Hernandez as a piece of a hitter prop parlay, right? Last night we were building these out. Trey Turner, Tommy Edman were able to help the deal. Kike this year batted 320 at the Trop, 2-for-6 against the McClanahan this season. I could see Hernandez being a worthy piece there if you're building out some hitter prop parlays.
Yeah, could be a factor. If we're just looking at who is the best hitter in the lineup and how they probably match up against McClanahan, the lefty, for me, probably going to be Dalbec, Kevin. 30 bats that he's had this month against left-handed pitchers. Take a look at this ISO. 643, which is outstanding, with a weighted on-base percentage of 519. So he's due to bat 6 in this lineup. We'll see when the official lineups come out. But for me, he's probably the best overall hitter. But keep in mind also, the highest strikeout probability in that lineup versus lefties, you know who that is? Dalbec as well.
Bobby Dalbec, one of the better names, I'll be honest with you, in Major League Baseball. We'll see if he can get it done today. We'll also see who can get it done today for Tampa Bay. The answer is everybody, because they have a Tampa Bay Rays. We'll break down how this Rays lineup profiles against Eduardo Rodriguez. We'll also talk a little college football next, right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is Randy Arozarena, Austin Meadows, Nelson Cruz, Brandon Lau. They really are loaded, I guess, but none of them are legitimate stars. It's very bizarre here, Donnie. How does this group profile in their matchup coming up here against Eduardo Rodriguez?
Probably as good as you're going to profile, at least you're going to get from the playoff pitchers early, particularly in these rounds. So if we take a look at the last 30 days, Eduardo Rodriguez, the lefty on the mound for the Boston Red Sox, got a good xFIP over the past month, 3.63, good strikeout numbers here, Kevin, 27%, which is a key when you're going up against this Tampa Bay lineup. But let's take a look at what Eduardo Rodriguez does well and what he doesn't do well. He's a left-handed pitcher, does extremely well against left-handed batters. Through 34 at-bats that he's faced lefties in the past month, a 204 weighted on-base percentage and an ISO power number of .031. Sensational stuff. Now, if we take a look at the left-handed batters here for Tampa Bay anticipated tonight, Kiermaier's a lefty and Lau is a lefty. Outside of that, it's going to be all right-handed batters. So let's flip over to Eduardo Rodriguez and what he does against being a left-handed pitcher against right-handed batters. A .403 weighted on-base percentage. By far, some of the worst numbers that we've seen outside of Gerrit Cole's start of how he handled right-handed batters in his start going up against the Boston Red Sox. A .191 ISO power number to righties, which is slightly elevated. Let's take a look at some of these bats in the lineup tonight, particularly focusing on the first 6 batters in the lineup tonight anticipated for the Tampa Bay Rays. Look at the weighted on-base percentages here versus lefties over the past month. Arozarena, 358. Franco, 480. Nelson Cruz, 344. Yandy Diaz, 399. Brandon Lau, 376. Mike Zunino, 513. Now, we also said, Kevin, Eduardo Rodriguez, a good strikeout pitcher, close to 27% of the batters he's faced. He struck out over the past 30 days. This lineup is going to strike out a lot. Your leadoff batter, Rosarena, 36% of the time that he faces a lefty over the past 30 days, he has struck out. Nelson Cruz, somebody you would figure, a right-handed bat doing damage against lefties. Not the case here, Kevin. 35% strikeout rate against left-handed pitchers since he's a right-handed batter. And then you get into that lineup from 5 down to 9, 26%, 22%, 22%, 20%, and 20%. And also, when you try to factor that in, say, okay, maybe they're just swinging like Joey Gallo. I know you talk about a lot saying he's got a great eye for the ball, but just can't seem to hit the ball, but he knows the strike zone. Look at the walk rates here versus lefties in this lineup for the Tampa Bay Rays over the last 30 days. It's not great. Franco, 6%. Cruz, 3%. Diaz, 6%. Brandon Lau, 0%. Zunino, 5.3%. Kiermaier, 0%. So they're either striking out, not walking, or hitting the baseball and driving it into the gap. Should be an interesting one tonight, but I actually like this matchup here for Tampa Bay. Even though we know the Trop isn't necessarily the greatest hitter's ballpark, you do have some batters here, Kevin, that profile very nicely against left-handed pitching.
Perhaps finally a game that could produce some runs here in the postseason. Now, Yandy Diaz and Rosarena both jump out as guys for hitter prop parlays. They are both pretty solid against lefties, better numbers at home on the season, especially Yandy Diaz this year, 7-17 against Rodriguez there, bat 4-12 against them. Only one of those an extra base hit, though. The one guy I wanted to make sure I asked you about, Donnie, though, was Zunino, who crushes lefties on the season, has 9 extra base hits against the Boston Red Sox on the year. He's minus 105 to get a hit. When we look through, you know, why we always talk about hitter prop parlays is you usually have to, you know, put them together because they're such big numbers. Zunino minus 105, that's a very bettable number. But it feels like this is a guy, and the numbers back this up. I think he has 72 hits on the year, 46 of them being extra base hits. Where is it worth betting him just to get a hit, or should you be looking for bigger prices? I think it's about plus 230 for two total bags for Zunino, because if he makes contact, it's probably a double or better.
No, you're exactly correct. And sometimes you just have to lean on the statistics and how hot they are coming into these type of situations. Because again, lefty on the mound, he is a right-handed batter. It's not a lot of at-bats, but it's not like 2 or 3 or 4 as a sample size. It's 19 at-bats, Kevin, over the past 30 days for Zunino. And as I said, the ISO power number, a good one, 0.170. He's at a 6.11. Just think about that. It's astronomical that he has, so you're correct. What he's doing with his at-bats say that he's driving the ball into the gap or leaving the ballpark. And if you need it, why would you do it to yourself and say, okay, first of all, he's a catcher. He doesn't run all that well. So if he hits a single, like we talk about, hey, Trey Turner can get, which we call it exactly correct, Trey Turner can hit a little bleeder in the infield and beat it out at first base for a base hit. Zunino is not doing that in this game. He's going to have to hit the ball a long way, either into the seats or into the gap, which would lead to those two bust places that you would need, and possibly even a home run call tonight for Zunino. I like where you're going with that.
I think it's like 5-1 to hit a home run. If you're playing in that market, he could be worth a look there. Let's talk a little college football, though. We've got two games on a Thursday. This is one of those nights you need multiple screens loaded up, people. We've got a lot of action here on the board. Let's talk a little college football. We'll start with Tulane, Houston. An interesting spot here where last week we saw Houston in kind of that isolated slot, I believe playing some Friday football against Tulsa as a field goal dog ran them off of the field. Houston this year, dominant on the road, two comfortable covers early on the road again as a 6.5-point favorite, Donnie, against Tulane. The total up from 59.5, which is where I saw it last night, checking in right now at a 60.5 mark.
Yeah, I like what I see out of Houston so far, particularly on the offensive side of the football. Let's take a look at also both of these teams on offense, Kevin. Points four for Houston, 37 points a game. Points four for Tulane, 35 points a game. Now, the key indicator in this one is Houston's defense, much better than Tulane's. But anytime I see a team like Tulane, Kevin, score in the mid-30s and give up 40 points a game, I'm going to be looking towards the over in this one at 60 points. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a very good defensive battle, as we like to say. Both teams can pass, but particularly from Houston's perspective, I think they're rounding into their own. And if I have a team that's giving up 40 points a game, how can I be looking at taking an under 60.5? I'm looking for points in this game, as I typically am, but particularly in this one. I think they can get over that 60 price.
I certainly agree, Donnie. I think, first of all, the fact that Houston has gone over both 40 points in both of their road games is good. You like to see an offense that is traveling, and theirs is doing just that. And as you mentioned, this is a two-lane defense right now that is giving it up. The only caveat would be they've played both Oklahoma and Ole Miss already. And you're talking about two, no matter what anybody thinks of Spencer Rattler here, come on now. You're talking about two of the absolute best offenses the country has to offer. The interesting thing, though, is we kind of go over some trends here, right? Last year's meeting of these two teams featured 80 points on the board, and the last three overall have seen at least 65 points scored in them. The home team, though, has won six consecutive games, I believe it is, of the Tulane Houston battle. And that's why I just like an over as opposed to a team total on Houston or anything like that, because it doesn't surprise me if a scrappy Tulane team here tries to pull out all of the stops, trick plays abound, and get themselves in a spot where they might be able to not only cover the number, but win this game here. It wouldn't surprise me. I think Donnie's spot on. The over is a strong look. And if you thought 60.5 was high, wait till you see this next game here on a Thursday. How about 72.5? Coastal Carolina, a 19.5 point road favorite against Arkansas State. Of course, we're talking about a ranked team here in Coastal, 15th in the country, 5-0 on the year, Donnie, playing the Red Wolves, who are 1-4 starting off this season.
Yeah, this is a gas pedal game, as I like to call it here, Kevin. Why is that? Coastal Carolina averaging 48 points a game on offense. And when you're not in the Power 5 conferences, what do you have to do to try to get some national attention? Absolutely blow teams out when you get the chance. Is there a better matchup on paper here for Coastal Carolina's offense to go up against Arkansas State? Let's take a look at what Coastal Carolina does well. I don't know everything, Kevin, on offense. 255 yards a game on the ground. That equates to 6.3 yards per carry. And why is that important? Take a look at Arkansas State's defense. They're giving up 263 yards per game on the ground, which is 6.7 yards per carry. Awesome. That alone should tell you the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers are going to dominate. But let's also flip it over. Dominant run team, Coastal Carolina. Take a look at them through the air. 270 through the air a game to match up with 255 on the ground. 12 yards per pass attempt. Why does that match up? Take a look at Arkansas State. 300 yards per game they average giving up on defense in the air. 9.6 yards per pass attempt. I don't know how it's possible to give up 263 on the ground and 300 in the air as a matchup. So I'm taking the 20 points out of the equation. I'm taking the 73 out of the equation. Coastal Carolina is hanging a 50 spot tonight. So I like their team total at 45.5. They're not going to stop scoring. They can't, because the only way they want to try to make noise and say, hey, I know everybody's looking at Cincinnati. Look at us here. Hang a 60 spot on a Thursday night. That'll get the attention of some people.
And I think for a team like Coastal, Donnie, when you can kind of line it up and go, oh, yeah, we can get to 60 tonight, no problem. Let's push right away. That team totals 45.5 at -106 to the over. If by chance a flat 45 checks in, what a dream scenario that is. But still, they've gone over 45.5 points in four of their five games this year in Coastal Carolina, a Red Wolves defense that has allowed 40 or more points in four consecutive, and they've allowed 50 or more points in three straight games. And they have now find themselves playing the best offense that they've probably played all year long. As Donnie said, they should be cruising. Also, a Coastal Carolina first half team total, if it's 24 or lower, is another strong look there. Coastal will score. Let's talk Thursday night football next.
Sports SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on Sports Grid, we break down Thursday night football. We have a great matchup between two teams in the NFC West, the Rams and the Seahawks. Seattle hosts as a 2.5-point home dog, -142 on the Rams money line here, and an over-under checking in right now at 54.5. And we went over some key trends that I think really can put into perspective why this is a difficult game to pick from a side perspective. Because in Sean McVay's career, when he goes on the road off of a loss, he is 8-2 against the spread. The difficult thing for McVay and the Rams is they don't have an easy opponent in front of them in Russell Wilson. And you're getting Russ at home plus points. Is that an easy bet? It has been. 8-2 against the number in Russ's career as a home underdog. Donnie, this is a side where I look at it and I'm thinking teaser, 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 because I'm not sure I'm willing to lay 2.5 or fade McVay in this spot.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting game here. It's a great game, too. I'm glad they put this game on Thursday night, so it'll give us something to watch along with the Major League Baseball tonight and the college football. But we're trying to break it down to its common element here. It's no longer the Seattle Legion of Boom on defense. For years, Kevin, when they would line up on the field, it's like, how do you score against Seattle in Seattle? The crowd is absolutely deafening. A very good pass rush, unbelievable linebacker play, and maybe the best secondary in football. That's not the case anymore. Take a look at Seattle this year in the NFL. Now, I know you can't really compare it to the NFL even, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. It's more of a passing and an offensive league. But look at the Seattle numbers on the season. Rushing yards against for them, 152 yards, which equates to 4.6 yards per carry. And then your passing yards, 292. So basically close to 300 yards per game they're giving up in the air for a pass yard average of 7.5, which is very elevated here in the NFL. Now they do have Russell Wilson. They should be able to let Russ cook. But also keep in mind, Chris Carson coming into this game with the neck injury, which they've always known he has, but I guess sometimes it flares up. He's a true game time decision, which actually makes it tougher because when you're playing on Sundays, then you play on Thursday, maybe need the extra day or two to get your neck ready and to get into that right frame of mind. If he doesn't play in this game, that could actually technically help the over, Kevin. Why? Because you're not running on first down. You're not running on second down. You're getting Russell Wilson outside of the pocket. And anytime Russell Wilson's usage rate goes up, Kevin, that's typically a good thing for the total here. But I look more from a Rams perspective in this game. Who do you trust more here? I like Sean McVay's offense. Do I love Russell Wilson? Absolutely, I do. But Matthew Stafford is going to be able to take some shots downfield. They're getting healthy once again at the running back position. A great offensive line. Maybe it's all about how loud the crowd can be in Seattle as opposed to how good their defense is. And that's not really a recipe for success going up against a Sean McVay offense.
It's such a tough spot because you've got a Seahawks team, Donnie, that last week, right, they go into the Niners. It was a tough spot. I thought that they would struggle. You were all over it. Your money line dog and that cashed, and they avoided, you know, falling really behind the eight ball here in this division. But again, picking against them means that's a 2-3 start. It's an ugly start for the Seattle Seahawks there. But again, this is a Rams team that's really difficult for me to look at and not, you know, have them stop a potential streak of losing two in a row. And I think one thing when it comes to this NFC West here is when you have a spot where you're playing back-to-back divisional games, which we will see when we're doing the Week 5 full breakdown tomorrow in Niners-Cardinals. It's going to be tough, I think, to win consecutive games in this division here. It pushes me towards the Rams, but again, I do believe the spread is tough, and I think that total could be quite difficult as well. I think it's a great live total in Play Sports tonight. Myself and Donnie right side, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We get things rolling on Sports Grid Radio. Of course, not just this game, but the postseason for Major League Baseball as well as college football. But this game feels like the live opportunities will be aplenty. Let's talk some props, though, here, Donnie. And let's go to the touchdown score markets, because these are always a fun one. Yes. People are always wagering in this. And I'll tell you the one thing that just jumps out right away, and I find this very smart by the FanDuel Sportsbook, and it makes a lot of sense there, is they're always prepared for a lead running back to be out. You'll notice Chris Carson, minus 110, anytime touchdown score, the same exact price as Alex Collins, who very well could get the start tonight if Carson is out. Any touchdown scorers catching your eye?
Yeah, usually it's easy to say Cooper Kupp, right? Minus 130, DK Metcalf, minus 115. There's a reason why they're favored, because they get a lot of red zone targets and they're the primary targets of their quarterbacks. But I like to slide it down a little bit and say, you know what? Where can I find some extreme value on a player to score a touchdown who doesn't really factor into the game plan all that much, but you can see him getting more involved and also hitting pay dirt? That's Van Jefferson here for the Rams. Let's take a look at his first four games that he's played this year, Kevin. First game of the season against the Bears, he only had 3 targets and 2 catches, but that was for 80 yards, and one of those was a touchdown. Now, game two, back to 3 targets, 1 reception, nothing on the board. So, okay, maybe he's leveling off at this point, but look at the last 2 games. So if we're talking about 3 targets and 3 targets in the first two, he's actually had 6 targets in the last 2 games. So 6 against Tampa Bay, 6 against Arizona, one of those games for 42 yards, 1 for 90, and oh yeah, that game for 90, which recently came against the Arizona Cardinals, that was for a touchdown as well. So if I'm looking at a guy who's played in 4 games and has 2 touchdowns, now I'm looking at this and saying, hey, look at this. Instead of spending the minus 110s, the plus 135s for Robert Woods, I'm going to take a secondary option here and go plus 210 on Van Jefferson to get a couple targets in this game, but more importantly, a chance to score a touchdown. Not really a flyer, Kevin, saying, hey, he's going to score his first touchdown of the year tonight. He already has 2, and I think he'll be involved in this game plan. It's a 54.5. Multiple guys are going to score a touchdown. I think Van Jefferson has a legitimate chance at that over 2-1 price.
I was looking at a player, Donnie, in a similar price range, also on the LA Rams, and that's Tyler Higbee. We've seen Higbee targeted down here in the red zone, already a touchdown on the season, just missed another touchdown last week against Arizona, that goal line stand that the Cardinals defense was able to come up with here. And we've now seen the Seahawks defense give up tight end touchdowns in consecutive weeks. At times, you can see where teams maybe are a little bit softer and where they can be vulnerable there. And Tyler Higbee at plus 190 for an anytime touchdown might be a legitimate shout here. As we keep moving through the prop market, Donnie, I want to make sure I talk a little bit about a Russell Wilson prop that I teased earlier that I think is a really, really strong play. And that is the over 36.5 yards for his longest pass. I put some expletives in my notes as I wrote this down, but the clean version is this dude throws bombs, and we know this about Russell Wilson. The moon balls that he has made so famous. He has gone over this number in 3 of his 4 games this season, and you look back to last year. He went over in the first 9 games of the season to start out last year. We've talked about Carson very well, possibly not making the start gate here. More Russ attempts means more opportunities for deep shots. And last year, he played the Rams 3 different times and threw a pass of 37 yards or longer in all 3 of those games. We talk about bets, Donnie, that you are in for all 4 quarters, and this is the perfect kind of bet. Russell Wilson over 36.5 yards for his longest pass is a bet that I absolutely love here on Thursday Night Football.
It's a pretty good one here. And also, sometimes you take a look at quarterbacks where we just get wrapped up in like their passing prop or their touchdown prop. I do love the fact when you have athletic quarterbacks. And also keep in mind, we keep saying the same thing, which is so true. Thursday night football is very, you know, the information doesn't flow as easily as the full game week because they don't really practice. So they sort of have projected practices and who was actually going to practice if it was a full practice. Thursday night football, the inactive report is going to be massive because let's just say, Kevin, coming into this game that Chris Carson is inactive. You know where then I go look at the FanDuel Sportsbook? How about Russell Wilson passing and rushing yards prop combined? It sits at a 294.5. If my leading running back is not out there, which means I'm going to pass more against a guy that can get some massive pressure up front and force me out of the pocket, why can't he add an extra 25 to 30 yards rushing when you already think he's going to have a pretty solid game out of the pocket to make it happen? Over 294.5, if Chris Carson doesn't play tonight, does make a lot of sense for me here.
And also, just kind of on the Russ rushing perspective, his longest rush over 10.5 yards. He's been able to go over that number in three of his four games this year. And we know when Russ scrambles, right, Donnie, it's typically big yardage that this guy is picking up. So I don't think that's a bad shout at all. Went over that number in two of the three matchups against the Rams last season. So 10.5 for the longest rush of Russell Wilson in this football game could be a legitimate play as well. What about some of the skilled players here, Donnie, whether it be Darrell Henderson, who right now is the only running back with props, although there is a Chris Carson alt market that you could play. So it's basically overs only, which I, you know, is probably a way of making sure that you're not able to kind of come in on a super high number he plays or whatever it might be, or the receivers here. Who are you looking at skill wise, maybe in Thursday night?
It's interesting that we put this up here, too, because, again, we're trying to preface and see, like, who's in, who's going to be out, what makes the most sense. The one thing that you get a little bit nervous of is Jalen Ramsey, one of the very best cornerbacks in the NFL. When you go, you know, three wide, you go to your dime and your nickels, he usually moves inside and plays that slot receiver. So I usually love Tyler Lockett. Like anytime I see him, he's wide open all the time. But if he's going to be, might be the primary focus of Jalen Ramsey in this one, maybe you want to avoid him and maybe pick up DK Metcalf because they both have the same prop, but it's juiced. And there's a reason why it's juiced separately here. Tyler Lockett's over prop on receptions is 5.5 at plus 102. DK Metcalf, same thing, over 5.5, but a minus 148. If your game plan coming in as a offense that says, hey, you know what? We're going to pick on Jalen Ramsey all game long and have success. That's not the best way to go about doing your business in the NFL. So if I'm looking to say Tyler Lockett in the slot might be matched up more with Jalen Ramsey, I take him out of the equation and try to look down the list here. So DK Metcalf should be in line for a pretty big game just because the simple fact is one of the best cornerbacks in the game is probably not going to be just shadowing him for the length of the game.
The interesting thing is with the Lockett-Metcalf 1-2 punch is I wouldn't be surprised if he shadowed Metcalf, right? That's where live betting can come into such a benefit, where you might say, okay, because again, we have live player props on the FanDuel Sportsbook that we're able to bet on. You're able to bet on them right away. You just wait for the first snap. All right, where's Jalen? Okay, he's lined up over Lockett, boom, we're on Metcalf, and vice versa. Very well could be a way to approach this football game here because Jalen Ramsey is one of the most feared defensive players in the entire league. I'll also just quickly bring up this Matthew Stafford passing prop once again of 305.5, I believe it is up to right now here on the FanDuel Sportsbook. He has gone under this number in two of his four starts. And this is a game where I am not sure it is going to just be your, bombs away approach here from the Rams. I'm not sure it needs to be a bombs away approach here for the Rams. The hesitancy, though, that we have seen right now is the last three consecutive games the Seahawks have allowed over 300 plus yards or even just, over 305.5 for their opposing quarterbacks. You have to, combine the Garoppolo Lance final tallies there to get to that number. But I don't know about Stafford, again, throwing over 305.5. We typically kind of talk overs, especially in the props market, but that Stafford number might just be a little bit too high here on a Thursday. We take a break on the early line. We close it out by letting you know where a former Dallas Cowboy player will call home.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, let's close it out here on the early line. Kevin Walsh and Don Rideside. We're closing out with a little breaking news out of the NFL. Jalen Smith, surprisingly, was released by the Dallas Cowboys earlier this week. Well, he's now found himself a new home. And what do you know? It is in conference, the Green Bay Packers. Right now, Donnie working to finalize a deal with the former Dallas Cowboy linebacker, Jalen Smith.
Yeah, sort of got a raw deal here, Kevin, because you see that picture right there. He's now listed back at number 54, and he spent upwards of $500,000, Kevin, to buy out the rest of the inventory of his jerseys to go to number 9 with the Cowboys. Now he's traded. Obviously, he's not going to have number 9. He's going to go back to 54. How much does this help the Packers? I don't know, but it doesn't hurt the Packers. Now, you also want to say, like, because you see the guy released, and we know he's a name, signed a big contract. He was with the Dallas Cowboys. You can sort of put on that pedestal saying he must be a really good football player. But there's a reason why guys in the middle of the season get cut from a okay defense here, because maybe there's a lot more issues surrounding those knees than what we have been led to believe, even though the Dallas Cowboys signed him to a big deal. Will it help Green Bay? I'm not so sure. But will it hurt Green Bay? It won't hurt Green Bay. So a nice move for the Packers to pick up a talented guy. But whether or not it actually helps them on the field to get off the field on third downs, that needs to be seen here, Kevin.
And I think the key point, though, as you said, no harm in trying. Now, there could be if they stubbornly commit to Jalen Smith, who might be, you know, just bad, which is unfortunate. As you see the Notre Dame polo I have on right now, this guy was a locked top five pick coming out of Notre Dame and then unfortunately got injured in the bowl game, and it really messed things up for him. But as Donnie said, a Cowboys team that has a clear path to a division crown and are looking to get a high seed in the NFC, they're just going to move on because it saves some money. They felt like his play was harmful to the team. We'll see if he can turn things around in Green Bay. Turning things around over the morning after, which is up next here on Sports Grid for Donnie Rideside. I am Kevin Walsh. You see you tomorrow for a Friday here on the Early Line.